Chapter 43. If you've got the paws right, she'll fetch a dear little yelp and spring right out of her shoes. But you must get the paws right, and you will find it the most troublesome, and aggravating and uncertain thing you ever undertook. General Washington's Negro Body Servant, a biographical sketch. The stirring part of this celebrated colored man's life properly began with his death. That is to say, the notable features of his biography began with the first time he died. He had been little heard of up to that time, but since then we have never ceased to hear of him. We have never ceased to hear of him at stated unfailing intervals. His was a most remarkable career, and I have thought that its history would make a valuable addition to our biographical literature. Therefore, I have carefully collated the materials for such a work from authentic sources, and here present them to the public. I have rigidly excluded from these pages everything of a doubtful character, with the object in view of introducing my work into the schools for the instruction of the youth of my country. The name of the famous body servant of General Washington was George. After serving his illustrious master faithfully for half a century, and enjoying throughout his long term his high regard and confidence, it became his sorrowful duty at last to lay that beloved master to rest in his peaceful grave by the Piamac. 10 years afterward, in 1809, full of years and honors, he died himself, mourned by all who knew him. The Boston Gazette of that date thus refers to the event. George, the favorite body servant of the lamented Washington, died in Richmond, Virginia, last Tuesday, at the ripe age of 95 years. His intellect was unimpaired, and his memory tenacious, up to within a few minutes of his decease. He was present at the second installation of Washington as president, and also at his funeral, and distinctly remembered all the prominent incidents connected with those noted events. From this period we hear no more of the favorite body servant of General Washington until May, 1825, at which time he died again. A Philadelphia paper thus speaks of the sad occurrence. At Macon, Georgia, last week, a colored man named George, who was the favorite body servant of General Washington, died at the advanced age of 95 years. Up to within a few hours of his dissolution he was in full possession of all his faculties, and could distinctly recollect the second installation of Washington, his death and burial, the surrender of Cornwallis, the Battle of Trenton, the griefs and hardships of Valley Forge, etc. Deceased was followed to the grave by the entire population of Macon. On the 4th of July, 1830, and also of 1834 and 1836, the subject of this sketch was exhibited in great state upon the rostrum of the orator of the day, and in November of 1840 he died again. The St. Louis Republican of the 25th of that month spoke as follows. Another relic of the Revolution gone. George, once the favorite body servant of General Washington, died yesterday at the house of Mr. John Leavenworth in this city, at the venerable age of 95 years. He was in the full possession of his faculties up to the hour of his death, and distinctly recollected the first and second installations and death of President Washington, the surrender of Cornwallis, the battles of Trenton and Monmouth, the sufferings of the Patriot Army at Valley Forge, the proclamation of the Declaration of Independence, the speech of Patrick Henry in the Virginia House of Delegates, and many other old-time reminiscences of stirring interest. Few white men die lamented as was this aged Negro. The funeral was very largely attended. During the next 10 or 11 years the subject of this sketch appeared at intervals at 4th of July celebrations in various parts of the country, and was exhibited upon the rostrum with flattering success. But in the fall of 1855 he died again. The California papers thus speak of the event. Another old hero gone, died, at Dutch Flat, on the 7th of March. George, once the confidential body servant of General Washington, at the great age of 95 years. His memory, which did not fail him till the last, was a wonderful storehouse of interesting reminiscences. He could distinctly recollect the first and second installations and death of President Washington, the surrender of Cornwallis, the battles of Trenton and Monmouth, and Bunker Hill, the proclamation of the Declaration of Independence, and Braddock's defeat. George was greatly respected in Dutch Flat, and it is estimated that there were 10,000 people present at his funeral. The last time the subject of this sketch died was in June, 1864, and until we learn the contrary, it is just to presume that he died permanently this time. The Michigan papers thus refer to the sorrowful event. Another cherished remnant of the Revolution gone, George, a colored man, and once the favorite body servant of George Washington, died in Detroit last week, at the patriarchal age of 95 years. To the moment of his death his intellect was unclouded, and he could distinctly remember the first and second installations and death of Washington, the surrender of Cornwallis, the battles of Trenton and Monmouth, and Bunker Hill, the proclamation of the Declaration of Independence, Braddock's defeat, the throwing over of the tea in Boston Harbor, and the landing of the Pilgrims. He died greatly respected, and was followed to the grave by a vast concourse of people. The faithful old servant is gone. We shall never see him more until he turns up again. He has closed his long and splendid career of dissolution, for the present, and sleeps peacefully, as only they sleep who have earned their rest. He was in all respects a remarkable man. He held his age better than any celebrity that has figured in history, and the longer he lived the stronger and longer his memory grew. If he lives to die again, he will distinctly recollect the discovery of America. The above resume of his biography I believe to be substantially correct, although it is possible that he may have died once or twice in obscure places, where the event failed of newspaper notoriety. One fault I find in all the notices of his death I have quoted, and this ought to be correct. In them he uniformly and impartially died at the age of 95. This could not have been. He might have done that once, or maybe twice, but he could not have continued it indefinitely. Allowing that when he first died, he died at the age of 95, he was 151 years old when he died last, in 1864. But his age did not keep pace with his recollections. When he died the last time, he distinctly remembered the landing of the Pilgrims, which took place in 1620. He must have been about 20 years old when he witnessed that event, wherefore it is safe to assert that the body servant of General Washington was in the neighborhood of 260 or 70 years old when he departed this life finally. Having waited a proper length of time to see if the subject of his sketch had gone from us reliably and irrevocably, I now publish his biography with confidence, and respectfully offer it to a mourning nation. P.S.S. I see by the papers that this infamous old fraud has just died again, in Arkansas. This makes 6 times that he is known to have died, and always in a new place. The death of Washington's body servant has ceased to be a novelty. Its charm is gone. The people are tired of it. Let it cease. This well-meaning, but misguided Negro has not put 6 different communities to the expense of burying him in state, and has swindled tens of thousands of people into following him to the grave under the delusion that a select and peculiar distinction was being conferred upon them. Let him stay buried for good now, and let that newspaper suffer the severest censure that shall ever, in all the future time, publish to the world that General Washington's favorite colored body servant has died again. With inspirations of the woe-year-olds, all infants appear to have an impertinent and disagreeable fashion nowadays of saying smart things on most occasions that offer, and especially on occasions when they ought not to be saying anything at all. Judging by the average published specimens of smart sayings, the rising generation of children are little better than idiots. And the parents must surely be but little better than the children, For in most cases they are the publishers of the sunbursts of infantile imbecility which dazzle us from the pages of our periodicals. I may seem to speak with some heat, not to say a suspicion of personal spite, and I do admit that it nettles me to hear about so many gifted infants in these days, and remember that I seldom said anything smart when I was a child. I tried it once or twice, but it was not popular. The family were not expecting brilliant remarks from me, and so they snubbed me sometimes, and spanked me the rest. But it makes my flesh creep, and my blood run cold to think what might have happened to me if I had dared to utter some of the smart things of this generation's R-year-olds, where my father could hear me. To have simply skinned me alive, and considered his duty at an end, would have seemed to him criminal leniency toward one so sinning. He was a stern, unsmiling man, and hated all forms of precocity. If I had said some of the things I have referred to, and said them in his hearing, he would have destroyed me. He would, indeed. He would, provided the opportunity remained with him. But it would not, for I would have had judgment enough to take some strychnine first, and say my smart thing afterward. The fair record of my life has been tarnished by just one pun. My father overheard that, and he hunted me over 4 or 5 townships seeking to take my life. If I had been full grown, of course he would have been right, but, child as I was, I could not know how wicked a thing I had done. I made one of those remarks ordinarily called smart things before that, but it was not a pun. Still, it came near causing a serious rupture between my father and myself. My father and mother, my uncle Ephraim and his wife, and one or two others were present, and the conversation turned on a name for me. I was lying there trying some India rubber rings of various patterns, and endeavoring to make a selection, for I was tired of trying to cut my teeth on people's fingers, and wanted to get hold of something that would enable me to hurry the thing through, and get something else. Did you ever notice what a nuisance it was cutting your teeth on your nurse's finger, or how backbreaking and tiresome it was trying to cut them on your big toe? And did you never get out of patience, and wish your teeth were in Jericho long before you got them half cut? To me it seems as if these things happened yesterday. And they did, to some children. But I digress. I was lying there trying the India rubber rings. I remember looking at the clock and noticing that in 1 hour and 25 minutes I would be 2 weeks old, and thinking how little I had done to merit the blessings that were so unsparingly lavished upon me. My father said, "Abraham is a good name. My grandfather was named Abraham." My mother said, "Abraham is a good name. Very well. Let us have Abraham for one of his names." I said, "Abraham suits the subscriber." My father frowned, my mother looked pleased, my aunt said, "What a little darling it is." My father said, "Isaac is a good name, and Jacob is a good name." My mother assented, and said, "No names are better. Let us add Isaac and Jacob to his names." I said, "All right. Isaac and Jacob are good enough for yours truly. Pass me that rattle, if you please. I can't chew India rubber rings all day." Not a soul made a memorandum of these sayings of mine for publication. I saw that, and did it myself, else they would have been utterly lost. So far from meeting with a generous encouragement like other children when developing intellectually, I was now furiously scowled upon by my father. My mother looked grieved and anxious, and even my aunt had about her an expression of seeming to think that maybe I had gone too far. I took a vicious bite out of an India rubber ring, and covertly broke the rattle over the kitten's head, but said nothing. Presently my father said, "Samuel is a very excellent name." I saw that trouble was coming. Nothing could prevent it. I laid down my rattle. Over the side of the cradle I dropped my uncle's silver watch, the clothes brush, the toy dog, My tin soldier, the nutmeg grater, and other matters which I was accustomed to examine, and meditate upon and make pleasant noises with, and bang and batter and break, when I needed wholesome entertainment. Then I put on my little frock and my little bonnet, and took my pygmy shoes in one hand, and my licorice in the other, and climbed out on the floor. I said to myself, now, if the worst comes to worst, I am ready. Then I said aloud, in a firm voice, Father, I cannot wear the name of Samuel. My son. Father, I mean it. I cannot. Why? Father, I have an invincible antipathy to that name. My son, this is unreasonable. Many great and good men have been named Samuel. Sir, I have yet to hear of the first instance. What? There was Samuel the prophet. Was not he great and good? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.